Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
The Lifestyle Show.
Selina McKenzie.
Our brains are incredibly adept at repair.
The me nobody sees.
We create our own realities.
A deep insight into mental health.
This is indeed the me nobody sees. We are discussing bereavement amongst other things today. This is our dedicated mental health awareness show. If you feel like joining in, you can tell us your story or ask for any advice, then do give us a call on 952 78 4000. You can WhatsApp 645 99 67 95, or use good old-fashioned email studio@tre.radio.
For me, nobody sees. A deep insight into mental health.
And joining us on the show, we have Deb Jones. Welcome back.
Hello.
A lovely lady called Anne McCluskey. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And our very own Mary Carmen. How are you doing, love?
Hi, Selina. How are you?
Are you okay, me duck?
Yes, me duck.
You're going to teach us some Spanish phrases. Yeah. How you doing with Dave? Right, well, we are talking bereavement, but you never know where this show is going to take us. It's all to do with raising awareness of mental health, because we all have mental health. Starting with bereavement, though, Deb, I know you see a lot of clients coming in and out of your clinic for various reasons. This must be a tough one, because it's something that is just going to all encompass somebody. How do you help somebody to get over grief?
Yeah. Well, bereavement is a big subject, and it certainly is probably one of our most painful emotional processes we go through, and something that we have all experienced in one shape or form in our life. And so when people are coming with bereavement, it's because they're probably feeling very, very stuck in their feelings and their emotions, and don't know how to transit to get to the other side. I think when you're experiencing bereavement, certainly on a death level, bereavement isn't just about the death of a person. It's about a death of an experience, death of a chapter in your life. You know, it's a loss. But certainly in my experience, it's probably one of the most painful experiences for people to go through. And, you know, even though we can experience bereavement throughout our lives, each bereavement experience is different, and it's processed in a very different way. And so you might think that when one person passes, that's really going to wipe you out, but you seem to be able to manage it and handle it, and you'll get a long succession of different kinds of losses, and then the cat will die, and then that will be the bit that
the tipping point.
And that's very common, is that people can't find the space to grieve, can't find the space to feel those emotions, maybe not ever really been allowed to experience those feelings, and so that's where they can get very stuck.
I interviewed a lady yesterday, and she was saying, I've lost lots of people in my life, I've lost grandparents, she said, but that's sort of the natural order of things. But last year she lost her fiance of 7 years of cancer, and she had to nurse him for 8 months, and she said it was just something that I just couldn't get over, because he was so young, and like we've said, it's her future. What she did say at the end of the interview, because she wants to help other people, is she said, I promise you can be happy again. And I think that was really good advice, because when you lose somebody so close, I can imagine, fortunately I haven't actually had to go through it yet, apart from grandparents and people who sort of expected, I can imagine that you think you're never going to be happy again.
Well, that would be a very primary primary loss, and there's secondary losses, and so to lose someone that you share your life with, who you have a past with, who you potentially have a future, but you also, that person can meet many needs that you're not able to meet yourself. So when they pass, it just creates this huge hole that they don't know how to fix themselves. It was that other person that fixed that hole. Yeah. And that can really open a cavern for people.
And I often wonder if it's better to have somebody, I don't think there is a better, it's a horrible situation, but if my partner or a parent was going to die, whether I'd rather it be quick, because it's kinder for them, which obviously I would, but that's a shock for me, or whether I'd rather it be an illness, not wanting them to be ill, but so I've got a chance to say goodbye. Do you know what I mean, Anne?
Yeah, and I guess that's the experience I have. I lost my mother a year and a half ago to dementia and Alzheimer's, and I can remember years ago thinking, now my mum was 86 and I'm in my 50s, so I have had a lot of privilege to have her as long as I have, but I can remember thinking years ago, I can deal with anything, but I don't think I'd be able to deal with dementia or Alzheimer's. And the grieving process and the bereavement happens over a long period of time, and it takes, I mean, so my mum got diagnosed 4 years before she actually died, and that whole 4 years is a whole process of losing something each time you see them or you speak to them. Whether it's, I would have spoken to my mum because I've lived away from home for years, I would have spoke to her every day. So that was kind of the first thing that kind of went. And then you lost something else, and then there was something else. So I often do think this because I'm privileged, because I've got my dad still, and he's 93. And
wow.
I think even though he's 93, I mean, it would tell you that he doesn't have long left. But I already am preparing myself for the shock of him dying. I think with my mum, I prepared myself as much as you could. With her dying, and because I don't live where they are in Ireland and I live here in Spain, I kind of had thought through all the practical side of things, but nothing really does prepare you for the moment when you see them, if you do, if you're lucky enough to see them, so nothing quite prepares you for that. But and as you said, Deb, grief is so different in bereavement for every single person. And it's a really interesting question. Would it be better quick, or would it be better over a long period of time? And there's no right and wrong answer to that.
No.
Everybody deals differently with it. And it's all about the relationship we have with that person. What they were in our lives, what they represented, what our future looked like with them. So I can imagine somebody that lost their fiancé, that, you know, you've planned your future with that person. As we go through life, we have lots of losses, and I don't know about you, Deb, but that's one of the things with my client work, because I'm also a counsellor, that I've experienced, that when people come because of bereavement or loss or death of somebody, it's at that stage then that all the other losses from their lives, whether it's the loss of a job, whether it's the loss of anything at all, it actually all comes at the same time, because this is actually the opportunity almost. Death is an opportunity for that person to mourn all the losses in their life.
Yeah, the poor lady, 8 months later, her father died of cancer as well, so she had double trouble. What type of counselling do you do then, Anne?
I do general, so my background is I worked in GP practices and also in secondary schools. So I see young people. I see young people from the age of 12 right the way through to, I think the oldest person I worked with was in their late 80s. The type of counselling that I do is very gentle, and there would be a lot, it's called person-centred, that's the backbone of it. So it's going at the speed of the client, going at whatever speed they need. So I'm not rushing them, or I'm not trying to tell them what they need to do. It's just sitting in that moment, because they've got all the answers themselves. And it's very interesting. If it's okay, I want to just tell a story about somebody I did work with in GP practice a few years ago. The referral list was quite long, and there was a referral of about two months. So there was a lady that I was due to see, and I phoned her up and I said, I'm sorry, you've been on the list for 2 months. And she says, oh my gosh, it's amazing that you've rang me now. I says, can you come in next week? And she came in, and I read the referral, but because it was from 2 months ago, I didn't realise she actually had a bereavement 3 weeks before she came in to see me. And there is almost like a general thing in counselling and psychotherapy, that leave it a little while before you start working with someone that has experienced death of a person or bereavement. And in that moment, all of that came to my forefront. It was like, oh my gosh, it's only been 3 weeks. But the relationship this lady had, it was her son, unfortunately.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
And they were an addict. And she had been estranged from the son for a long period of time. Mm. And then just a few weeks before he died, she actually was speaking to him again. And it was very, very weird, because what, even though it was only 3 weeks after the death of her son, what the experience of counselling did, the therapy at that stage, was it actually allowed her to start processing, because she felt she didn't have a right to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's what it's about. It's about the relationship we have. So I had three sessions with that lady right at the very start of her journey of grief around her son. But it almost gave her, I guess, you know, that she could actually just, she could start the grieving process, because before she felt that she didn't have a right to.
And I suppose beforehand, because they were estranged, she sort of already started the grieving process, if you like, because she'd lost her son to being an addict and they weren't in touch. Mm. This was just like the final bit, I suppose. Oh, that's a sad story. Can I ask how your dad's doing? Because I'm assuming they've been together a long time.
Yeah, they were together for 60... Well, if my mum was still alive now, it would be about 67, 68 years.
Wow.
Married. So together a lot longer than that. My dad's doing okay. I guess the other thing is my mum died last May, a year past in May, and my dad got diagnosed with dementia in September last year. So that was almost like a double whammy. But he is, at the moment, he's not that great, but he is amazing for his age. Still able-bodied. If you saw him, he just looks, he's got a full head of hair, very vibrant. Every time I go back, he's like, would you like a little glass of wine? And he has a friend that lives on the street, and every Wednesday they have the Wednesday Club. And his friend comes and they have a Guinness at 1:30 every Wednesday. So he's doing very well. And it's interesting, because I almost learned how to grieve from my dad, watching him, how he was grieving my mum. It was the most inspiring thing in a period of my life that was very tough.
Yeah.
But we took real inspiration from him. He sat with it, he talked about her, he, you know, that was his process, and just sitting in that moment with him really helped us process as well.
Sounds like an incredible man.
Yeah, oh, he is.
Yeah.
He is, yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask you, Marie Coleman, only if you feel comfortable, because I know it's very raw, it's very new, but I know that you lost your grandmother recently.
Yeah.
How are you doing now?
I'm doing well, to be honest. I'm not, I'm focused on supporting my mum, most of all.
It was her mum, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was my mother's mum. And because I was not very close to my grandmother, I don't have that feel of loss.
Okay.
I mean, I was sad. I'm sad because she's gone, of course, but she had Alzheimer as well, and she was gone since a long time. So it's my mom who is doing worse now. But she already has the ashes, and she's very happy, and now has the clothes back of my grandmother, and, well, that's helping her to grief. But this year, you know, it's very curious, because this year I was prepared to receive these circumstances. Always had a lot of fear for death.
Yeah, of course.
And I didn't understand death. And this was even affecting me to wake me up in the night and crying in the night, because I don't understand death, because why so random, you know? And it's the second funeral I have been this year. I went to another funeral in March of a brother of an ex-boyfriend. That was tragic.
Very
because
young.
It was a very young boy, a very young man with children and everything. but I was not understanding. And life wanted me to give me some answers, and I found a book, a Tibetan book of living and death. And I that gave me a reason and gave me something to reflect on death and to understand a bit more. And I am upfronting this in a different
way. That's very sensible. Yeah. That really is sensible. Mm. And is that a thing, Deb? Because I must admit, I'm similar. My mum and dad are in their 80s. They've been married for like 65 years, and they're both extremely healthy, and I hope they're not listening. Mm. But it is something like the opposite to PTSD. It's something I wake up in the night and worry about before it's even happened. So I'll probably go on for another 10 years, please God. But I do think to myself, you know, they're of an age, I should go over more. What I'm preparing myself, and it's worse than probably worse than when it's going to actually happen, because then you deal with it.
Yeah. The order of things is that we will lose our parents first, but you know, our parents have been there since the very beginning, and it's hard to imagine life without them. You know, if you have any semblance of a relationship with your parents, then they would be people you would go to, and so the idea that they are not there takes away that child role, and then you're upgraded, and it's like, oh well, I'm the next tier then. So there's a lot that's involved in it, and you know, we don't know what to expect when it's someone so close to us.
Yeah.
How am I going to feel? And you know, Mary Carmen, you said you were supporting your mum, and in some ways that's a loss too, because you've lost mum for a while.
Yeah.
You know, mum is not there for you.
Yeah.
She's in her own grief, and your role has changed. It's almost like you're being the parent to her. And so that can create difficulties, like, well, where's my space to grieve? Because there isn't really that space when you are supporting someone else. And so it's important to remind ourselves that you have a right for your grief. You have a right for your space to grieve.
Interesting. Well, amazingly, we do have to take our first advert break, but please don't go anywhere, dear listeners. We will be back on the other side.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Oh, we're back. There was no "the me nobody sees," or maybe there was and I didn't hear it, Mary. Probably was my fault. It's great having Mary here, because if anything goes wrong, she can help me out. Okay, so serious subject, bereavement. I was reading on, let me get it back up, on the UK news headlines this morning, apparently that old graves in England and Wales could be reused under proposals to manage a shortage of burial space. The Law Commission's looking at reopening graveyards that were declared full during the Victorian era. Shocking. I understand why they're having to do it, but shocking. How is it in Spain, Mary? The people are buried and cremated, or do you just have cremations?
No, they bury and they cremate as they want in their will. But I think it's different than in the UK, because if somebody passes away or dies today, the next day normally is the funeral because of the heat, I guess.
Yeah.
And so maybe if a person dies today, we have one day to velarlo. Velarlo is just staying with the family, and then at the next day is the funeral, or even at the very next day.
And with your grandmother's ashes, are you having a memoriam? Have got some sort of remembrance place for her?
Well, my mum keeps them in the house.
Aww.
Yeah, with a photo.
That.
Yeah,
I've got that with all my animals. I've got a whole shelf with all my animals and all the pictures.
Me too. Yeah, I mean.
Just people think we're weird, but I don't care. I don't care. I mean, I haven't lived in the UK full time for the longest time, but they still have, people still have cremations, they still have burials. But I think the nice thing is now that they don't have to have religious ceremonies, do they? They can have whatever funeral service they want.
I remember when I was younger that people were buried within the week, but then as I got older, you know, it's weeks and weeks.
They seem to have to do post-mortems and things now, don't they?
And investigations and the coroner's officer.
Yeah.
And so it's quite a long, protracted process back in the UK. And we are running out of space in the UK. We don't have the burial sites, and people are not buying plots, deep plots. You know, families would just buy two or three the depths so that you could all be buried together. And our cremation sites are filling up.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're finding more imaginative ways to be buried, and I know very clearly that I would like to be in a pod.
A pod.
Apparently, you can be buried whole in a pod that goes under a tree, and you grow a tree from it. So,
oh, that's
nice. What I would like to
and
do.
And that's giving back to the earth.
Giving
as
back
well,
to the earth,
it?
And it's you know, and there'll be growth from it. So. How my children want to visit that tree or take a cutting and however they want to do it. But
I must admit, I haven't thought about it. I have my funeral songs. I've had them for about 30-odd years on a CD. I don't know if people would still use CDs. And it's in a safe place, and my husband knows the two songs I want. But I haven't thought about what I want to do. Have you, Anne?
It's an interesting one because I do have my letter of wishes completed. And about, let me see, what are we in now? About 8 years ago, I sat down with my mum and my dad before my mum had dementia when I moved back to Ireland, because I used to live in England before that, and I actually sat down with them and did both of their letters of wishes with them, and I must admit it was the best thing ever, because I have a large family and obviously everybody's got an opinion about everything and we think this and whatever else. It was just fantastic to actually have their wishes in front of you. And I think you did you say that your grandma was the same as well?
Yeah.
So I have mine. Now, not everybody, because I would encourage everybody that I know to do it, but not everybody is there yet with it. I think when you do your letter of wishes, you've embraced it. We're all going to die. And not everybody is there yet.
I know my parents did theirs a while ago, and they've told me and my sister where to find them. But every time she made it, I said, I don't want to talk about it. Don't want to talk about it. I know where they are, but I don't want to talk about it. She said, no, but I need to tell you these things. I need to tell you where such and such is and where the passwords is and where they get. I don't want to know. I just don't want to know. Sorry, Mum, but no. I'd rather just bury my head in the sand.
I had a conversation with my son, Sam, before the show, just saying I was coming on talking about bereavement. And I was talking about my life insurance and pension, and he both my children are really struggling at the idea that I will pass, and I can't get them to.
Oh, it'll be a long time though, yeah, won't it?
10 years.
But it is scary for the children.
When
you're younger. I remember the idea when I was in my 20s, my mum dying, it was crippling. But you know, you grow through the process, and it's never easy when they pass, but certainly age can help you to rationalise it a bit more, and we're much more steady in our own lives to be able to carry on.
How is the gorgeous Sam?
He's good. He moved house this week. yes and no, but he's making his way in the videography world.
Oh, is he?
And a real rising star with that. So.
He mustn't waste his voice. He has got the most amazing voice, ladies.
Oh,
I'll
play
it to you separately.
That's a grief for me, actually, is the idea that he's not singing anymore, because it was such a big part of our life. So when he decided he didn't want to do it to that degree, I went through a grieving process. That was our connection together, and how can I connect with him now if he's not doing that? I've got to learn to do it in a different way. So I did go through a loss.
I suppose you can grieve anything. I mean, if people have been in a job for 50-odd years and then they're not, you can grieve that, or a friendship that is no longer happening. It's all parts of grief, isn't it?
Yeah. Like you're moving countries, you know.
Definitely.
There's even, you know, like a spiritual loss. If you change into these new beliefs, then you've got a loss of the person you used to be. There's a death of yourself. You know, as we change, as relationships change, as friendships change, losses across the board, and that's why I say we've all experienced that in some shape or form.
And it's interesting that you mentioned beliefs there, because our belief systems is actually at the core of probably why and how we grieve. So for instance, a loss certainly when I was growing up, everybody around me got married at a certain age, they all had children at a certain age, they all did certain things at a certain age. Thankfully now the world is a lot more flexible than that, but I know myself, I had to deal with the loss, and some of my friends also that never got married or didn't have children or whatever, because you actually, from the whole way through your life, and you're much younger than what I am, you actually have this idea of what your future is going to look like. So anything that changes that future is a grief, is a loss.
I think that's a big one. Women who find out they can't have children, I think that's a massive grieving process to find out that you can't naturally have children. Can I ask you, you're from Ireland, so Are you Catholic? Do you mind me asking?
Yes.
So would you go for burial or cremation, or is it pretty mixed over in Ireland?
Going back, say, a year or so ago or 2 years ago, everybody got buried. Or most people, 99% of Catholics would have got buried. Cremations are now on the up.
Oh, okay.
So more people are getting cremated. Now, it's not that much more. But going back to what way we do it when somebody dies in Ireland, usually when the person dies, within 2-3 days of them dying, you have the funeral and the burial or the cremation. It takes a little bit longer, I think, with cremation because of the waiting list, because there's only, I think, one place that's accessible for us, and it's down in the south of Ireland to get cremation. And I guess it's an interesting one because before my mum died, I've obviously worked with people with grief and bereavement, and it was interesting how different people needed different things after the death. So, for instance, somewhere to go to. And it's interesting now that my mum has died, the graveyard, it becomes, and even my dad at 93, that's the reason he goes out of the house every day. Somebody takes him to the graveyard. So it's a real focus point. So at mm-hmm. least the person hasn't gone completely almost because they're there. For myself, being here, it doesn't matter as much to me if I go to the grave or not. And it's interesting because in one of Deb's podcasts that I did, one of the ways that I've dealt with the grief with my mum is I really feel that she's present in everything that I do. She is what made me. She's part of me. She's like, so if a challenge happens to me or something happens, I think, look, my mum and my dad have given me everything that I need resource-wise to deal with this. I will be okay. I get sad at times and I cry and whatever, but I just have this I've got to a place that's it's peaceful. It's very, very peaceful.
Oh, that's nice.
And I know that's not for everybody because the circumstances are not like that for everybody. So somebody that has a bereavement that's a real shock or an accident or something is very, very different. Very different.
But I think that will help people because, like, this dread of people dying and this worrying of how you're going to feel, when you hear, like, the lady I interviewed yesterday and you've just said you feel at peace, it's nice to know that it's not going to be the end of the world. You know, you can get over it, you can carry on living. You'll never forget that person and you'll never not miss them, I'm sure, but life can go on. It's just this phrase of time, you know, in time. I don't think there should be any time limit on grieving, personally. No. However long it takes.
It will take as long as it takes. And I don't... Life will never be the same.
No.
I don't know whether you can get over it, but you can get around it.
Yes.
You know, you have to build yourself and the way that you live life around it because that loss will always be there. And you'll learn to experience the positive emotions again, and at first you might feel guilty by feeling them, but that will normalize as time goes on, and the tears will get less, and the memories will get more special. It is just time.
And I think it's the firsts as well, isn't it? The first birthday without them, the first Christmas without them, or the first year must probably for you, Anna, have been the toughest.
And it's interesting because there was a date that it was my birthday that I actually felt it more, because it's the first time that I had a birthday that my mum wasn't around. And on my mum actually died on her birthday. But I see that as a good thing. It's amazing. And when the ceremony was taking place, the priest said, you know, that my mum's name's Jean. Jean came into this world on the 29th of May, and she left this world on the 29th of May. And I just think there's something really significant and peaceful about that also.
I agree. I think that's quite lovely. She planned it that way, or God planned it that way.
Absolutely.
I think also, I mean, I'm not massively religious and I'm not massively into spiritual things. I believe in something. I want to believe in something because I want to believe that when any of my loved ones go, that they're still around me. And I remember when a friend of mine's mum died and we kept seeing feathers everywhere. Mm. And it was really, I wasn't sure whether I believed it or not, but it was really helping her. But another friend said, oh, you know, it's ridiculous. It's not her mother. What does it matter if it's making that person feel better, completely, whether it's real or it's not real, or it's her or it's not her?
Yeah.
I just think each to their own.
Mm-hmm. I think that was quite a significant thing for me to try and understand what death meant. As my cousin died very suddenly a few years ago. Mm-hmm. He was 34, his heart just stopped, and to realise that one minute they're there and the next minute they're not sent me on this quest, which is, I can now see as the start of my, this is my own personal belief, but my own spiritual journey of, where do we go?
Yeah.
and how come you were here and now you're not? And how can I feel that you're closer to me now than when you were alive? Mm. And a feather dropped and I just knew. It just felt like a sign.
Yeah.
I now have a tattoo of a feather on me now.
Aww.
Because for me, that is the beginning of a huge journey for me. And it's really helped me to find peace and to feel connected. There is a wonderful poem that says that we're never gone. We're just in another room where you can't see us. And that makes a lot of sense to me now, is that, you know, you feel your mother around, and I don't know whether you experience the idea that grandma's still around. Is the body may die, but the soul, the essence of the person is still around.
Yeah.
If you choose to believe that, it really can help you feel connected.
Sure.
Yeah.
It'd just be nice to see their face and hear their voice.
Yes. Because that's the human part of us. Just wants to hold them one last time.
Yeah.
It's part of the bargaining part.
One thing that happened to me when my grandmother passed away this month, it was I didn't stop finding the best friends of my mother. I found her in the supermarket, in the street, everywhere, and I everybody was saying, my grandmother has passed away, can you call my mom and text her? And everybody, all the friends, I found her and say, how are you? And say, well, my grandmother died, you know, oh, I'm going to call your mother. And I was like, thank you. Thank you, because I'm sending people here to support. Yeah. But you know, all these signs that appear when you have a loss, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. We need to take another advert break, but we will be back on the other side.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Okie dokie, we're just going to go over to some WhatsApps now. I'm sort of reading these on the fly. I haven't checked them, so hopefully they'll all be okay. Cookie says, losing a loved one unexpectedly feels like someone has ripped out your soul. Mm. Oh dear. Trodden and trampled on it, then thrown it back in your body. Mm. And then left you to get on with it on your own. Oh, I'm sorry, Cookie. That's something obviously very, very raw. Sorry to hear that. Maybe some tips on how Cookie or anyone else can.
When you have such a traumatic experience like that, it's trying to make sense of it. You know, we have to go through these different processes of grief, and We're going through the shock, we're going through the rage of it, we're going through the bargaining of trying to I'm going to be a better person now, and then if I am, then maybe they'll come back. And then we can feel very low about it, and then we come to acceptance. I think that being able to talk about it so that you can order those thoughts, to feel so ripped apart like that, it will not make any sense. Mm-hmm. And having someone that you can talk that through to just try and make some semblance of sense of it.
I suppose you feel a sense of anger as well.
Yeah.
Why have they left me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
how do you help your people, Anne?
Sitting with the emotion that the person's feeling at that moment, because we change very quickly. We go from anger to rationalization to all over the place. So it's literally just sitting with that person and allowing them to feel whatever they're feeling. And what this person that's contacted us, Cookie, has said is he seems, or she seems, very, 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 very good at expressing what is going on for them. And that's absolutely amazing awareness. Mm. And awareness is definitely the first step to dealing with finding a way to even, I guess, put your feet on the ground to kind of stabilize yourself. You know, literally, as he said, everything got ripped apart. So it's just being an anchor for the person that I'm working with. And as you said, Deb, talking to other people to actually get support. Support is crucial. Sometimes even if we do things on our own and we're very supportive, you know, self-supportive, it can be really tough reaching out or asking or whatever. And the last thing you want to do, I mean, I've met people that husbands died in shops a few months after with their head down, because I can imagine that it's just so tough. You don't want to, because people always say, oh, how are you? And you know, and I have a friend who lost her dad not even a month ago, and she said that's the thing that gets her when somebody turns around and says, how are you? That's when she starts crying. So I would say the best support that, or what I would offer, is just a space to actually be there and meet them wherever they are in that moment, with the hurt or the deepness of the anger or wherever it is that they are, and accept what's going on for them, because it's their feelings.
Yeah, lean on friends and family, I guess, like Mary looking after her mum at the moment, because you know what she's going through.
Well, now my mum is working a lot, she can put a little bit away the thing, and work is obviously helping because it keeps the mind busy. But because I understand there's nothing I can do to take the grief away from her. I wish I could, you know, I wish I could take all the grief. But I try to, and this is something I have talked to her, and it was actually a very beautiful conversation, that I said, I can see how your inner child is crying.
Oh.
And my mom couldn't stop crying. I took her hands and I said, I understand completely your inner child, but I'm with her, I'm with you, I want to be with you, I don't want to be in any other place. And it's been a very beautiful, it's painful but beautiful journey when we meet, when I can see her, because we work so much both. So
I think you don't even sometimes have to talk, do you? Just sitting in a room holding each other, or just sitting in silence, anything that someone needs at that time. That's beautiful. We've had some more through. I don't know who this person is, let's just have a look. I haven't got a name. Last two digits, 70. Thank you, whoever you are. Great show. My mum passed away over 4 years ago, and I found the second year almost harder. We had a typical Irish wake with my mum laid out at home, and it actually brought great comfort to us as a family as we shared stories and grieved together. We had the most amazing gentle undertaker called David McGowan. He has a show on Netflix. Oh, we'll look that one up. And explains about what happens after death and the body with embalming. Thank you from Roisin. Sorry, I didn't know you put your name there, Roisin. Thank you so much for that. That would be an interesting one, finding out what happens to the body.
Firstly, what I was going to say, listening to Roisin's message there, is I can get why the second year would maybe be harder, because sometimes and you said your mum has gone back to work. Sometimes we busy ourselves because we're just not ready. We're just not ready to accept it. We're not there yet. You know, so I can get that for somebody that may be more difficult. And how lovely is it what Roisin says about the whole process? And when we were off air, we were just talking about processes, how different people do them differently, if it's cremation, as we said, or a grave. And I think that is lovely, that everything, and that is the thing, that everybody that I've come across that does work in the industry, the death industry, actually is really, really lovely, lovely people. Really lovely people. And it's really nice that even though it was a really horrific experience, that it was actually, she can take a lot of comfort from it.
Yeah, that's good to know. Yeah. Mary?
Yeah, no, I just remember when my father's mum passed away in 2008. My father didn't cry. We were all in the funeral, and my uncle that was like 16 years older than him was crying like a baby, but my father didn't cry. And I always tell him, like, you never cry, you have to cry. And he's like, no, I'm fine. And I remember him, I when it is the day, because I remember, I say, are you okay? Are you doing well? You want to talk? No, I'm fine. But it's so important to cry and to let go, because it's like cleaning, it's like cleaning an injury, you know, a damage. Yeah.
And I think people process their emotions in different ways. It is harder for men to cry.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you've been brought up that boys don't cry.
Yeah.
And so they will be able to process it in their own way. It might be going out with their mates or to a football match, or they might get angry, or they will be processing those feelings in a different way. For a girl, it's very natural to cry.
Yeah.
Some men find it very easy to cry, but it sounds like maybe dad struggles to let those emotions go, but he might be finding other ways.
Maybe my dad
was the same with both his parents, but he's of an era, because he was born in like 1940, I think. It was the generation of like you say, men don't cry, you know. I think I've seen him cry once. But he loved his mum and dad, and like you say, he probably processed it in a different way.
There's also the flip of that, is that funerals or memorials is an acceptable way for people to show emotions. So if people are not able to show emotions in other ways, or haven't processed grief from previous events, you'll go to a funeral and then people can let go, because it's okay. It's acceptable there.
Which brings me on to brings me on to a friend of mine. I won't say any names, but her mum died a few months ago and she didn't have a funeral, and she said, no, me and my brother don't want a funeral, we're just going to have her cremated, and then we'll do something on her birthday and blah 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 blah, and respected her wishes. But I knew that the next day was just another day for her, and she carried on and on and on. Although I know she was deeply hurt and deeply upset, she's quite a strong cookie, and she carried on. And I think now it's hitting her, because she hasn't had chance for closure or to say goodbye.
It's interesting about being at a funeral and that actually giving us then, you know, they accept it, or it's acceptable to cry and be emotional. I can remember going to other people's funerals, like uncles and aunties, over the past few years, and music does it, like a song.
That's me. And oh my god,
I know. And like now, even a song that was played at one of my uncle's funerals, it's just the most amazing song. It's called The Lonesome Boatman, an Irish song, and it is just unbelievable. But I've got goosebumps just talking about it. But I'm like, you're sad at a funeral and like I'm crying, and that's what my emotion wants to do. But then I kind of think to myself, gosh, people's maybe looking, thinking it's not, you know, you weren't that close to them or whatever. But you're totally right, Deb. And it happens in all sorts of places for everybody. You know, you might be okay and then something happens like a month later, or you're somewhere and it's like the tears just come. I think it happens as well when you're around a person that's really there for you, a really empathetic person, so you've held all of this stuff together. And then all of a sudden there's a person that you don't need to be anything. You just be yourself. And then that's when you just let it out.
No, I was remembering I was thinking to put some music, because my grandmother liked a very specific kind of music, which is a very traditional music from here from Malaga. And I was thinking, maybe if we play some of this music, my mother is going to help her. But you know, this music is horrible, so I don't want to play this. I was thinking, okay, I'm going to listen to this so I can go through this with my mom. But no, I don't understand why my grandmother liked this music. It's just a disaster.
Well, I've told my mum, if anything ever happens to her, which it won't, because she's promised me she'll live to 110, that I can never listen to a Barry Manilow record ever again. So just saying, if ever you see me and I'm crying in the future, it's probably Barry Manilow. We need to take our third and final advert break.
The Lifestyle Show.
Selena McKenzie.
We are almost out of time, but thank you to everybody who's written in and joined in with the Me Nobody Sees. I'll just finish off with, actually, I'll do it at the end. Let's just go to Deb. If people want to get in touch with you, Deb, how can they do so?
Yes, if you would like to have someone to talk to, you can contact me via my website, which is www.theenglishtherapist.com, and I'm based here in Marbella. And also I have have launched a podcast that you can listen to through Spotify and Apple Podcasts called The Relationship Edit.
Brilliant. I've listened to a couple of them.
And
really
I have actually interviewed Anne in one of the podcasts where she talks about her bereavement and living with dementia. So that's episode 8, if you would like to listen to that. But please, listen to some others.
Interesting.
We cover loss and bereavement on the others as well.
Fantastic. And Anne, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, I'm based in Alarin El Grande over here. And if anybody does want to speak to me, they can give me a call or send me a WhatsApp. My Spanish number is 686-333-259.
259. I'm just making a note of that, not because I'm going to try and talk to you. Just so as I've
You're
got
more
it.
Than welcome.
And Mary, how can we get in touch with you?
If you want somebody to talk about how crazy you are like me and cry about that, I'm your person.
Bless you. When are you next on with Dave?
Sorry?
When are you next on with Dave?
I don't know, because we are so busy at the moment.
Yeah.
He's busy, I'm busy in working, but we have to work on new stuff. Yeah.
We're going to be on the next Animal Talk anyway.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
Talking about cats.
Well, thank you to everybody. That was the Me Nobody Sees. Give yourselves a round of applause. Well done, everyone. Hannah is next. Alan and Sean are here tomorrow with the Friday Conversation from 2. I will be back with your Sunday Selection on Sunday and the Lifestyle Show on Monday at 2. Finishing off with a lady called Anna, and she said, tell your loved ones and other significant people in your life that you love them often. You may know when you might not get another chance. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Selena. Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye.
Listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.